Trekkie Show with Stan Shaw
on ABC Radio Perth and WA.
Last night, Premier Mark McGowan said it would be, quote, reckless and irresponsible to reopen WA's border with case numbers on the East Coast continuing to climb. He says people need to get their booster shots to help safeguard against the Omicron variant.
What we do know about Omicron so far is that a third dose of the vaccine is so vital in giving people effective protection. So far, the science shows that people with only two doses of a COVID vaccine have only a 4% protection against being infected by the Omicron variant, just 4%. With a third dose, it can provide a 64% protection against infection. In addition, protection against severe disease is maintained at 80% to 90% for people with two doses, but increases to 98% for people with three doses. The science proves third doses make a stark difference against Omicron. It would be irresponsible and reckless for the state government to ignore the facts and ignore the reality of the situation playing out on the East Coast.
So that's Mark McGowan speaking last night. Some of the justification in the decision to not reopen the border come Feb 5. Professor Catherine Bennett is the chair in epidemiology from Deakin University and joins me. Good morning.
Good morning, Stan.
Is the Premier correct? Are those statistics spot on?
Yeah, we have to remember that the protection he's talking about, the vaccine efficacy, relates to symptomatic infection. We do know that with our primary course that we don't have that same protection we have against other variants. So he's right there. That drops right down, particularly some months out. I think the challenge for Western Australia is not only that you've been able to keep the viral levels very low, very few local transmissions. In fact, in the last week, you've seen 20% of your total community transmissions from all time happening just in that week. So it shows how well it's been controlled in the past. But equally, it's also meant that you have, while your number of people who've had their first dose is really high, there's still 10% of those people waiting to have the second dose. And then you've got the delay that you have to have till you have a booster so that you get that extra effect that he's talking about. When we reduce the risk of symptomatic infection, it can make a difference at the whole population level. Doesn't stop all infection, though. There's still a third of the chance that you will have a symptomatic infection, and we know there's asymptomatic infections as well. So vaccines do work better with the booster against Omicron, and again, we've got that protection against serious illness, but it's not a guarantee you won't have spread. So that's the question here. You know, how long is it going to take to get the levels of boosters out there? Already over 25%, which is good. But the people who are slow to get their primary course are going to have to wait for the booster and what level is safe. So that's the big question mark here, is how long you can hold out. But the bigger question is, you've got Omicron circulating in the community, whether the choice is really up to the state or whether Omicron itself is you know, going to determine what the timelines might actually look like.
But this decision, it would certainly slow what someone called a tidal wave of Omicron, to some extent, giving the WA government and the health system time to get those boosters out.
It would, but you are talking, as I said, about quite substantial time, given the number of people that have only had their second dose or are still waiting on their second dose. You know, you're waiting 3 months, that is a long time, and you have Omicron in the community. This isn't about keeping Omicron out, it's there. And the epidemiological concern with Omicron is if you have enough people who aren't vaccinated or who are vaccinated, you know, with the primary course but don't yet have the booster, that we have seen this spread, and it's mainly in your 20 to 39-year-olds. That's what we're seeing consistently in every state and every country. That's where the spread is happening. And unfortunately, that's the group that have the lower rates in WA as well in terms of their completion of the primary course. And so, again, it delays when they might get the secondary. So it will slow it down, just as asking people to wear masks, the restrictions we have in place on the East Coast, all those things are designed to slow it down. But then, you know, the question is what role the border plays in that. And so that's what might shift with time when we see what happens with the control of Omicron in the community that's already there in WA. That just might make the border decision less important if you actually have a sizable outbreak you're trying to manage. And then you're pulling all those other things in to make it work. If you had zero Omicron, you know, you might be in a different position, but I think Omicron already in the community is going to actually be the thing that determines the timing and the borders.
Professor Catherine Bennett, my guest, Chair in Epidemiology from Deakin University. So when does the booster, the third shot, begin to wane in effectiveness? And does that mean that a fourth shot is inevitable?
Well, it's still too early to tell. I know there's some very early conversations coming from very early booster doses being monitored. The first booster doses went out in countries like Israel to the people who were most at risk of immunity waning anyway. So the people who are immunosuppressed, the people who are elderly and don't have a stronger immune reaction. So there's no guarantee that the results from that group would apply across other populations, and particularly other younger adults, for example. The boosted information is showing that it's holding well, it's holding better, even against Omicron, than the primary course, because we do have this cross-reactive immunity, which gives us that better protection from Omicron. But they've really only followed it out to, you know, the first 10, 12 weeks or so, and it's looking good. And the hope is that even if some people, like those people who are immunosuppressed and had three doses just to make up their first course, let alone boosters, they might have a different protein program for their vaccination. But the rest of the population, young, healthy adults, it may be enough. And in fact, that's the one thing. We have higher infection rates in Australia now that actually boost that immune coverage that we have from the vaccine as well. So in fact, at a population level, that's starting to change our immunity profile too. And it might mean we don't need a booster, or it might mean we do need something if a new variant comes along. Mm. Or these universal vaccines they're developing that cover the coronavirus in a different way. So it means that variations you get from variant to variant are less likely to escape the immunity. So there might be developments down the path that are also about next generation vaccines, which is a different thing again, and would be fantastic if we could go that path as well.
A lot of might be's as far as vaccinations in the future and Omicron and variants. What are the chances of a new variant popping up in 2022?
Well, that's what everyone's watching with the sheer number of infections at the moment, not just here but globally. You know, we've got waves in sync in the northern and southern hemisphere at the same time. That didn't really happen in 2021. You just need that chance event, you know, where you have a lot of viral replication happening, that chance is more likely to be seen. So when the dust settles from Omicron, that'll be where it's important that we're having a close watch globally, which they are, to see if there's anything else that's emerged in the process that could challenge us further. So they're always watching for new variants. The hope is that we're seeing a broader range of variants. Our immune system is seeing a broader range of variants, and that gives us better protection going ahead, hopefully. But also, we have, you know, while we're conscious of the vaccines and prior infection not protecting you from infection in the same way as they have before, it's still protecting us from serious illness. And that makes a big difference. You know, the sorts of numbers we have in the communities today, across all states, including Western Australia, these are numbers we haven't seen before, but they are thankfully not putting that same proportion of people in hospital. You just could not cope with the sheer number of cases we have in the eastern states if they were all translating to hospitalizations in the way they were in the past. So the vaccines, you know, have made a massive difference in terms of that risk, not just to the individual, but also to how we can cope. But our tests still work. You know, our treatments still work for people who do still become very unwell. And we've just seen those antivirals approved in Australia as well that help avoid disease progression in people who are very vulnerable. So we've come a long way in 2 years. We shouldn't fear new variants in the way we might have in the past, because we're learning more about the virus every variant we have, but also our protections against the virus are continuing to build. So it's in our stride, but at the same time, it's something that does put those kind of ifs in the conversation still as we look ahead, but you know, in a very different way, you know, in a way that we shouldn't be so fearful of.
Many West Australians this morning feeling a bit bummed about this, anxious, uncertain about the future. As one of Australia's leading epidemiologists, are you hopeful that there's an end to this, there's some light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, a lot of people are saying, you know, when does it end? And I think it's going to be possibly disappointing in the end. We've been through so much, but in fact, It won't be we wake up one day and say, oh, it's over. You know, we'll actually say, actually, it's been calm for some months. We haven't had word of a new variant, or the latest variant we've had is something that's well within, you know, our control measures. And I think that will be the case. You know, there'll be some point when we realise it's over and it now is endemic, but it won't be a certain day. You know, we'll just see the trend for that happening. And I do think where, as I said, for all those reasons, you know, testing, treatment, vaccination in particular, we're in a very different position now. And that's what happens. We're evolving alongside the virus, and technology is fantastic. And, you know, some of the things that we hadn't thought about in the past that keep us safe from any infectious disease are things that we've learnt about and we've normalised, you know, whether it's wearing masks, you know, when you need to, some of those other measures we have in place, even practising distancing and things, you know, actually keep us safer, not just from corona, but from other colds and flus as well. So I think there's going to be some side benefits we're seeing. We're going to be thinking about how we engineer our environments so that they're safer. And so going ahead, we'll actually be less vulnerable than we were before this all started. And I think that's really important from an infectious disease epidemiological point of view, that we take all of that with us and not only move beyond this pandemic and learn to live beside this virus, but also benefit from it in having less risk more generally from infectious diseases.
Fingers crossed, let's hope. Hey, nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Catherine Bennett there, Chair in Epidemiology from Deakin University.
The Brekkie Show with Stan Shaw
on ABC Radio Perth and WA.